Now it's time for Inside the Clubhouse, a show dedicated to the Chicago baseball fan, featuring the best Chicago baseball conversation, as well as the big MLB topics, along with the biggest names, greatest guests, and listener interaction with Chicago baseball expert Bruce Levine and Ryan McGuffey on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Good morning and welcome to Inside the Clubhouse here on 670 The Score alongside my guy Bruce Levine. I am Ryan McGuffey, and Bruce, the Cubs and Sox have packed up and headed home. But
are you sure?
Well, not everyone. I think some of them, but not everyone. I've seen a couple guys still straggling around town, but this is like one of my favorite times of year. I mean, the baseball playoffs have started exactly how I expected to be, like just completely on fire, upsets galore. The Mets Brewers game is still drunk from the other night, and there's plenty to sort through with not just the playoffs, but our own teams here in Chicago. Boog Shambi, the voice of the Cubs, he's going to join us at 9:30 to preview the Phillies and the Mets. Jerry Harrison, former Cub, he works for the Dodgers out west. He's going to preview the Dodgers and Padres. That's going to be a phenomenal series. He'll be on at 10:30. We want to hear from you, 312-644-6767. Tito Francona is now the manager of the Reds. We got free agency to discuss. My goodness. And we have to break down Jed Hoyer as well, Bruce.
Well, first of all, Ryan, happy you're with me all winter. David Haw's off on his trek toward national stardom here, being
Did you get your antenna?
TV. I have an antenna.
Okay,
yeah.
Great.
But I had mine from, 60 years ago. So I was good. I didn't have to go out and buy one. But, I want to talk initially about how stupid the playoff format is.
Ooh,
okay.
Wow. Okay.
So you have an intriguing, exciting, phenomenal series between the Mets and the Brewers,
awesome.
Right?
Yep.
Ends and our friends of the North. It ends not well, but just a great series, and it ends in three games. Okay. So the Brewers spent 162 games, most of it all year in first place, right? Two games and you're out? Okay.
Isn't it better than the other format, though, where it was one game and you're out?
No. I mean, it's not, because you might be right. It's better. Is it the right thing for a 162-game season? Okay, it's not. It isn't, okay?
But you are still playing a three-game. I mean, baseball is a 162 games of three-game series, right? Isn't that what you're doing?
So why don't we just play a three-game season to decide? Obviously, it's not going to change right now, but they changed it already twice, okay? Now we have this, okay? We had the one-game wild card for a long time.
I thought that was horrible.
But this is just a little less horrible, okay? Because arguably the Brewers are a better team than the Mets, okay? Are they a better team right now, okay? I would rather see the depth of a pitching staff, the depth of a bench, the depth of a team be explored for a five-game series, okay? If you can't do seven, five, okay? Again, seven is ideal, right? That is a true test of the depth of a team and an organization at that point of the year. Three games is just, people are getting started. They're just getting started. Oh, we're down 2-1. No, you're not. You're out of the playoffs, okay? So I just had a rant about that because it's just ridiculous. It's just, it's not indicative of who the better team is, in my opinion.
I will say this. If you win your division, you shouldn't be playing in that first round. Maybe that should only be and I don't know how you fix that because you have three wild card teams. So that's why the lesser of the division winners has to play in the wild card round, because you should be rewarded for winning a division. I'm looking at the text line right now. The 312 says the same thing. The Brewers won their division. You shouldn't have a three-game series in the first round. I can buy that. I don't mind the three-game series for wild card teams. you gave there's a 40-game sprint to the end. You get 3 games now to figure out who can win 2. I don't mind that, but maybe I'll buy the validity of the Brewers.
All right, I will accept that a contingency that no first place team is. But how do they do that when numbers?
One way to do it maybe is that you seed the wild card teams 1 through 3, and 2 and 3 play each other, and then they get, and then the one seed waits for the winner of that, and you play the wild card. But the problem is, you don't want baseball, and no one really wants baseball, the World Series, to go into the first and second week in November.
It's just stupid because the first round is like so important to be able to get in after 162. And then you go, oh, the second round, we definitely think it's 3 out of 5. Okay, what sense does that make?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's like, oh, okay, the second round, we want to see your depth more. But in the first round, we want the element of, you're the best team all year, but you're out because you had 2 malfunctions out of 3 games.
And that's why ownerships across Major League Baseball are struggling, I think. I think they don't know. They are wondering, should I go all in and spend all this money when I could be out in 3 games and just be the hot team at the right time?
Right.
You know, so an 85-win season, in theory, looks exactly the same at the end of the year as a 95-win season.
But the conversation should be, we want to win the World Series.
Always.
Not we want to get in the playoffs. Because the playoffs in baseball will continue to be watered down. By the time the next CBA with the owners and players is in place, you will likely have expansion of 2 more teams. That means that you're going to have expanded playoffs again. And you're going to have 8 teams.
Well, then at least you can figure out the wild card round. You can just have the wild card teams duke it out to get to the division series.
Right. I just, you know, again, why am I watching 162 when my team, the Brewers, if you're a Milwaukee fan, is out after 3 games, okay? Doesn't make sense.
No, I mean, that's why people aren't watching 160. That's why baseball has an issue.
Well, I it used to mean something.
I know.
And again, so did a 7-game series, okay? Okay, we don't have time because the weather's getting bad. You know, have the World Series in some other place. Don't have it. Give 10,000 seats to the home fans of each team and have it in a climate sometime in the second week of November where you also continue to have the interest in your sport, which is part of the brilliance of the NFL, that they play almost 10 months out of the year now.
Yeah.
If you include camp, right, that starts in July, camp gets preseason camp for Bears and teams in most markets gets more play than some of the baseball teams do during their season. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, there's a real issue.
So you're going July through January now in the NFL. Dominate, right?
Yeah.
Keep running your sport. And baseball would be no different, okay? I'm just saying, have longer series, make these series available to fans on stations where they know it's being played, okay? Where you're not looking all over the place for, you know, the next few rounds, people will be looking all over. FS1, right. Fox, you know, TBS, Fox 1, oh, I don't have it anymore on my station, on my channel, sorry. How do I stream this now and then quit in a month? I mean, it becomes a little too complicated.
Well, that's the nature of sports, period. I mean, the NFL's all over every streaming service.
Well, now that we've lost our audience totally.
Well, you know, I was going to say, you know, Major League Baseball, this is our producer, Robbie, he's wearing his Jeremy Bonderman jersey today, and I respect the hell out of that. He's a big Tigers guy. But Major League Baseball they're not ecstatic about Cleveland, Detroit. They're not ecstatic about Kansas City at the Yankees. And with all due respect to those fan bases, and they deserve to move on because that's the format, that's what's happening. You are getting these hot, smaller market teams. Look at last year's World Series.
I think it's fantastic.
I do too. Yeah. But like Houston, the Houston market, Major League Baseball was rooting for the Astros. I guarantee you that. They want that Houston market. They love that the Mets beat the Brewers.
I'm glad they're out.
Yeah, me too. Well, look, if we were talking about the Cubs knocking out the Brewers or the Mets in best two out of three, there'd be no one in this city that would have a damn problem with the format.
If it was the other way around, they would.
Not if they were the hot team. Not if they were an 86-win team to get into the playoffs, or the 89-win Chicago Cubs.
Okay.
That's the format.
I'm not going to win this one now. I think in the long run, baseball should look at the reality of longer series being something that really shows the quality of those teams getting in.
Depth.
And it also, more importantly, like you pointed out, Ryan, points out to ownership and general managers that, no, it's not about just getting in. It's about having the best team to try to win the World Series.
Yeah, stars are still needed to win playoff games. That's period. Bobby Witt Jr. the other night doing the same thing. And let's with that thought, let's go to the Cubs, because they finished 83-79 for the second consecutive year. We've heard a lot. We talked last week about the 90-win comments, about how Craig Counsell said this needs to be 90-win seasons that we're building. Well, 90 wins get you in this year, Bruce. Every 90-win team made the playoffs.
Right.
And that should be the goal at this point for the Chicago Cubs. And Jed Hoyer met the media earlier this week. You talked to him. You had some questions. But let's hear from Jed Hoyer on what he thought went wrong for the Cubs this season before we give our thoughts.
I mean, ultimately, we collectively fell into a slump in May and June that we couldn't get out of. I think in baseball, you're going to have ups and downs as part of the game. But that went on way too long. And we just dug ourselves a hole that was much, much too big. And, you know, we did it collectively. It was our offense wasn't scoring. Our bullpen was struggling. It wasn't just one factor. I think it was kind of multi-factor at that point. And really, if you look at it, and we got to 9-under, if you look at our record since then, we played really good baseball. I think we're up like a 580 winning percentage over the last 3 months of the season. So I think that gives a lot of reason for optimism. But ultimately, we just dug ourselves a hole that was too big.
Yeah, no one cares about how great you played in 580 winning percent. I mean, the Tigers had to go like 32-11 to get in. So that's when you dig yourself that big of a hole, you have to be scorched earth hot to get in.
The reason they dug a hole was because the bullpen was collapsing and their offense was not good. The bottom of the order started to hit the last 6 or 7 weeks of the season, and the ascension of Armstrong, Amaya, even Bethancourt, who came on as a backup catcher and had some huge hits. That was the difference in the offense. It wasn't Wrigley Field, okay? Contrary to, you know, which is true. I mean, Hoyer points out it was Wrigley Field, a lot of the problem, that it played huge. It did. He's right. But that's not the reason the Cub offense failed. Cub offense failed because the last four guys in the lineup, and the Cubs aren't the only ones in baseball that happened with, couldn't hit, okay? So concentration was, let's get the top of the order out. After that, it's going to be easy pickings for us, and it was until some of those players started to come along. And you know, good for the Cubs as far as their young players. You had player development at first. You had it in center. You had it behind the plate. They're coming along nicely there. But the reason they failed was the offense failed. The bullpen failed.
Bruce, they had two good months. That's it. They had two good months. They were hot in April. They were hot in August. Everything else was 500 or below. That's not a winning team. I mean, that's a 500 team. They're four games over, but that's what a 500 team is.
And the one thing that's been constant since 2017, maybe 18, is September failures.
Yeah.
Okay? It's been a constant. And they hated it, and they couldn't figure it out when they had their big boys. You know, those guys were not hitting in September. They weren't getting it done. They left in 21 via trades. The last few years, September, you know, last year was a disaster. This year was, you know, right around 500, maybe a game over. I didn't look at it, but it's probably right at 500 in September this year.
Yep, 500.
And but when you dig a hole, as Hoyer said, you can't play 500 baseball in September.
Yeah, I like what you said about the bullpen. And, you know, the Cubs had 26 blown saves. 26. You know, split that number in half, and they're in the playoffs. And Jed Hoyer addressed that, and I thought this was one of the comments he made this week that stood out most.
I mean, being self-critical, I feel like that's something that I didn't do a good job of last offseason. You know, when I look at our bullpen, I'm really proud of the work our whole staff did during the season. I think, you know, talking about, you know, Carter and Jared and everyone, you know, in pro scouting did a really good job, you know, whether it was Tyson Miller, Jorge Lopez, you know, Nate Pearson, you know, player development, bringing up guys like Poor Hodge and Luke Little. I thought in season we did a really good job of that. But, you know, when Adbert struggled early, when Neera struggled early, when Julian got hurt, we didn't have the depth at that point that we needed. And that's something that, you know, I think we'll certainly look to improve going forward, because I feel like that hurt us early. We were able to improve it. I think our bullpen numbers second half of the season were really, really strong and among the top in baseball. But, you know, at a critical moment when those guys struggled and were hurt early, we didn't have enough depth in that moment, and that hurt us. So that's something we have to address.
Yeah, I don't think there was a plan. I don't think you have to plan for bullpen arms. The volatility of a bullpen is...
Their plan was Alzolay and Neris at $9 million a year, the veteran who had thrown 3 years in a row, 70 appearances at age 35, was the backup plan. Okay, well, it didn't work out. Alzolay continued to be a hurt pitcher, continued to blow saves at a record pace to the point where they had to take him out of the closer's role even before he got hurt. He was hurt from last year on, eventually Tommy John surgery. Neris, you know, they heart attack Hector, as they called him, you know, throughout the season, or Hector Nervous, whichever one you want to use. Point is, he was a veteran. He had ice water in his veins. He was walking guys, giving up home runs. To his credit, you know, he was a pro, and he was an example to the other guys of going out there and doing your job, but it wasn't very good.
You're going to top rope me here, because you're going to tell me, well, how many great lockdown closers are in the playoffs? How many? But I don't think they had defined roles in the 7th, 8th, and 9th, and I think that hurt them. That's why you have 26 blown saves, not just injuries. You can't make an excuse for injuries.
Well, you can't use it as an excuse, but it was a reason, because everybody has injuries.
You didn't have a true lockdown guy.
No.
To start the season, period.
No.
Whether it was Azalea, even if Azalea was healthy, right, you're going off of what he did for 1 year.
You know, Brown could have been that guy. You know, we won't know that.
You made, one, you got Lopez at the deadline. You didn't really do anything at the deadline either.
No.
You didn't do anything to address
your lineup.
But I
will tell you this, to the credit of the Cubs front office, as Hoyer gave out credit to Hawkins and to Jared Banner and the other people in their front office who do a good job, they went out and they signed 30 pitchers from April on to try to help fortify that bullpen and their system. And they were working hard at it. Again, you know, they came up with some good solutions, but it was too little too late for 2024.
We're going to get into free agency later in the show, but I look at when I look at the Cubs, there's a plethora of names that are relief pitchers that are available. And they're going to have to spend money in the bullpen. They're going to have to bring in veteran arms in that bullpen. They're going to have to admit that probably one of them is going to be bad. And you're going to have to thread that needle and bring in guys and spend the money, because the bullpen... Here, the 3-1-2, an unmitigated disaster, you know? And good for Jed. I will say good for Jed for taking some accountability, though, and saying, look, this one's on me. I didn't address it from the start, and it killed us from start to finish.
You can't score, you know, less than 4 runs a game. You have to score closer to 5. It's, you know, the difference is huge. You know, you wouldn't think the difference between scoring 5 runs and 4 runs is big. It's actually enormous, you know, teams' records when they score 5 or when they score 4 or less. It's enormous. So this team, and you know what? I've said this before, and I'll continue to say it. They have a lot of good players. Cubs have good players. Every position, there's a good player. There's no great players, okay?
Yeah.
I think you have to have some great players.
You have to.
You know? And if you don't, you have to have great players coming.
Absolutely.
You know, you have to have great players coming. And I think the Cubs have good players coming. They have a really good minor league system. The proof is in the pudding when they get here. We'll see. You know, the Shaws, the Triantos, people like that are coming. They have to find spots for those guys. So Jed and Carter, they have a real tough job in the offseason here. They have to try to move more pieces into place, make trades, sign free agents, and at the same time be able to find places to put these guys. Are you trading some guys that you don't want to trade? Are you trading a guy like Horner? Are you trading a guy like Bush? You know, are you moving those guys?
Sounds like a lot of questions.
Are you moving those guys because, frankly, they're the only guys you can move?
Yeah. Well, and look, you mentioned about star players. That lineup, and we talked about this the last couple of weeks, it doesn't scare you. It doesn't scare you. And the reason is guys aren't hitting the ball out of the ballpark, and Jed addressed that as well earlier this week.
That is certainly something that was lacking this year. Like, you know, no one was hitting 30 homers, and we didn't have any one player slugging at a really high level. I do think Seiya, he ended up, you know, top 10 in the National League in OPS, top 20 in baseball. And I do think in general, Wrigley suppressed offense this year, and baseball's offense was suppressed. And I think sometimes we have to readjust the numbers in our head. You know, he was a top 10 guy in OPS in our league, and I just don't think we think about it that way because the numbers aren't 975. It's more of a 860, 850 OPS. So we all have to adjust our sights a little bit. But certainly adding more slug would be beneficial, especially in today's game. Scoring quickly is what you want. It's hard to string hits together, given the pitching today. And so we'll always be looking for more slug.
I'm sorry. I just threw up a little bit. Sorry about that.
So it's in your mouth.
Yeah, I almost lost it there when I heard something about Wrigley playing small.
But no, it's true.
I know. I understand.
I know.
It's
you're
true.
Saying it's an excuse.
Did other teams hit home runs at Wrigley Field this year?
Yeah, it was actually about even. Yeah. Home runs for the opponent and the Cubs. But, you know, Suzuki's one of those players I define as a good player. He's not an impact player.
Really good player on a great team.
He's a DH as well, okay? Mm-hmm. They had to take him out of right field because
liability.
There were some vision issues. He's not the same outfielder he was when he came up originally 2 years ago. He's not as good. So and he was a decent outfielder at the time. So I think the Cubs did their homework on the guy, but he's changed. His body type has changed. His ability to run has changed. He's a DH. So you have a right-handed DH who hits 20 home runs, okay, has an 850 OPS. That's a good player. Good player.
Yeah, it's a good player.
Not a star.
So is Ian Happ and Michael Bush. Those guys are good players.
Not a three or four hitter in a winning lineup.
Yeah, you can't have – I mean, you're leading – Ian Happ led the team with 25 homers. You had Bush and Suzuki with 21.
Right.
Like, that's why you're 83-79 too.
Hoyer, we'll talk about, and he's right. The Cubs had the sixth best offense as far as runs scored in 2023. So it was based on, okay, we're going to get a lot of run production from this lineup. Bellinger is going to play 6 months instead of 5 months because he missed a whole month in 2023 and still put up some enormous numbers. It didn't work out. You know, Swanson's numbers not there this year.
Yeah, and so, as a texter points out before we go to break, the Cubs scored two or fewer runs in 50 games. 50 games!
That's a lot.
That's a third of the season. They were 5-45 in those games. Boog Sciombe, voice of the Cubs and voice of the Major League Baseball playoffs, is going to broadcast today the Philadelphia Phillies and the Mets in game one of that series. He joins us next on Inside the Clubhouse. He's Bruce Levine. I'm Ryan McGuffey. This is 670 The Score.
Swing and a ball drilled. Right field. Freelick back. At the wall. Out of here. It's out of here. Alonso, an opposite field home run. And the Mets have the lead. Pete Alonso, the polar bear, takes Devin Williams deep. And in the ninth, the comeback kids have done it again.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse.
The call of the playoffs, obviously, thus far, and our guy on the voice. I mean, I turned away from the TV for a half of a second And then Boog Shambi got me back on the got me back in front of the television, Bruce. And the Score Hotline is presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. And our friend joins us, Bruce.
Our friend John Shambi doing the Mets and Phillies in Philadelphia for ESPN starting today throughout that series. John, also the voice of the Cubs on Marquee Sports Network. John, good morning. Thanks for taking some time out. I know your intense preparation is beginning, probably began last night for this series. But what a great call, first of all, on the home run by Alonso. That is for the ages, my friend.
I appreciate that. It was a lot of fun, man. That game was that was wild, just the back and forth. And, look, when games turn on home runs like that, you know, and especially the way it happens, you know, at home, and they go back to back, so the place is going nuts, and then the road team does it and the place is just silent. So it was, it was quite a series, that's for sure.
Boog, I'm watching that game with my son, and when the Brewers, you know, hit the back-to-back, I'm thinking, well, that's it, signed, sealed, delivered. You know, this, we were waiting for one team to break through, a great pitching matchup. Jose Quintana was fantastic for the Mets. And then, like I said, I turn around for 2 seconds, and Pete Alonso is going yard with your call. I love this part because, like, fans forget that as a broadcaster – that you're a fan too. So when you make a call like that, because it's a surprising moment in that moment, he's off hitting a home run off of Devin Williams, you're wrapped up in the emotion too, right? Like, that's a baseball fan making a professional call.
Yes, for sure. Yeah, it's like, yeah, you have moments like that, and it's like, holy cow, you know, like, and probably not cow. I mean, that's you're that, you know, sort of jarred by it. And yeah, I mean, I've been lucky to have some moments that, you know, one is, if you remember when Big Poppy hit the home run in the ALCS in 2013 and Torrey Hunter flipped over the wall at Fenway, but a game, you know, the Red Sox were down and Poppy hits the grand slam. You know, moments like that where you're just in the middle of it and the place is going crazy, or there's just this giant turn of events that you didn't see coming. Hopefully that comes across.
Boog, we were talking about the playoffs being three games, and most of the reasons I've always gotten was that the weather is always a consideration when you're moving toward November, and you have inclement weather in the Midwest and northern states, and you don't want the series played in that. Can you tell me your thoughts about a 2 out of 3 series after 162 games and whether that's sufficient in your mind or not.
I mean, look, it's, you know, we graduated from the 1-game playoff, which, you know, is hard because no matter what anybody says, single game elimination is captivating. And for ratings, it's huge. Is 2 out of 3 fair? Not really. But you know something? 4 out of 7 isn't especially fair even either. There's just, it's one of the things that I think, look, let's be clear. This is a sports world that is dominated by football and now the NBA. So, you know, baseball is pretty clearly in a third place spot. But you have more and more people that don't watch it as much. So to explain to people, the idea that in a smaller sample, that even in a 7-game series, the difference between Mike Trout and Tyrone Taylor can be nothing. If you don't watch baseball, if you don't understand baseball and you watch these other sports and not baseball, you don't get it. So I think that in these spots, I don't know that there's going to be a way. I mean, Bruce, ultimately what your question is pushing on, is it fair? Are we getting towards a situation where we're pushing that we're really delivering?
Right.
Are we really delivering a format that is giving us the best team? And the answer is no. This has turned into a tournament. So, look, if they extended it, it'd be fine with me. If you ask me this, would I be willing to carve, you know, 20 games off the regular season to make the postseason a little bit longer? Yeah, I would. But I think that you just kind of have to accept it in this sport that just sometimes stuff's going to happen.
Yeah, we're not going to get $60 million for some teams to drop, 20 games. But it's you're right about that, John. It would be – it fits in more with the modern fan,
Yes, that's right.
That schedule.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, you just said about who the best team might be, and are we seeing the best team at the end? I mean, the last few years, the answer's been no as well. Last year, we had the Diamondbacks and the Rangers. I think they were the 5 and 6 seeds, respectively, in their leagues. This year, you're sitting here calling the Mets, who are, along with the Tigers, you could be staring at a World Series in a few weeks with the two hottest teams yet again. But I want to talk about that series you're calling, because I think the Phillies, if there's one team, and look, who knows the Mets better than the Phillies and vice versa, but if I were backing two teams in big league and Major League Baseball right now, I think the Phillies are certainly that team that's been there from start to finish. What stands out about maybe the best team in the league with the Phillies and then the hottest team in the league coming into a best of five?
So I've had the Phillies in the playoffs the last couple of years. It's the lineup. The idea that when this lineup gets hot, it's a laser show, man. And it starts, with our old buddy at the top of the order, which I just love it. It's like the game begins and then Schwarber steps to the plate and it's like, oh man, we're serious now, aren't we? Because the first pitch of the game could be hit 7,000 feet. And I think there's just something about the lineup. I find Schwarber and Harper, like they're at bats and sort of the violence with which the ball comes off the bat, it's really compelling. So when those guys are rolling and then Turner, the power speed combo, Castellanos, who is a different breed of hitter from Harper and Schwarber because he's super aggressive. I think one of the top five swing rates in the game, but when he's right, so they can just steamroll you with the offense. And then, the other thing is, it's just for me, I don't know that people understand that Zach Wheeler's been the best pitcher in baseball for the last 5-6 years. Like, over the time, he's just been sensational. So they have this ace. Dave Dombrowski's put together a bullpen that has high velo. Both these teams are okay defensively. I would say okay enough is where they would place. It's funny. So you go back to it. I always do this. I'm probably a little too logical with these things, but you look at it on paper. Yeah, the Phillies are the better team. So I would think that the Phillies would have a more likely chance to win, but it's only 5 games and the Mets feel great right now. I think what they've done here with, Senga on the roster is quite interesting. And, we'll see what they can do. Obviously, I think it's a gamble they feel like that they can take and see what they get, because you're going up against Wheeler, who they have had success against, but still, I would say, not likely that you're going to generate a lot. So you're hoping for, something magical, funky to happen. But look, if the Mets get through this series, it's not like it's going to blow me away. They're trying to win 3 games.
Our friend John Chambi, our guest on Inside the Clubhouse, he's Ryan, I'm Bruce. We're here with you about 50 weeks out of the year on Saturdays talking baseball. John, here's a question you'll get on sports radio from me that you'll never get again. Who are you voting for the President of the United States and why?
No.
And, before we end both of our careers, obviously I'm kidding. But moving on, when you look at the Cubs season, you're doing 95% of the games along with JD and doing a great job, may I say, as well. I'm down on home games in the dugout the last few innings, waiting to go on the field along with either Taylor or Elise.
Yeah.
And I've never have been through a season with the Cubs where if they were down 3 runs from the 6th inning on, felt that that they didn't have a chance to win. I never felt that way, but this year I did. What were your thoughts about the offense and how you looked at this team this year?
All right. So the one thing that I would say is, number one, I started and would concur that I felt the same way. Number two, that's not really information, even though we both felt it. Like, it's not really like a team's ability to come back isn't really an
ability.
Yeah, it's just scoring runs. You just got. So I do think it's probably a little power related. I do think that the fact that they don't have a Schwarber and a guy that's just in the middle of that lineup. I think that some of it had to do with when this you know, some of those games in the late stages when you're going, you know, in the big spot and they were getting through 7-8-9, and 7-8-9 was just a wasteland for an extended stretch. And then for sure in the second half, PCA and Amaya really made huge improvements. It was weird. It was a tough year. It was just so extreme. April was great offensively, and then May, June, and July were bad, and then August and September were good. I don't think fans totally understand how Wrigley played this year to the extreme of how it played, and this is just the randomness again of weather, and it's perfect for baseball, but I mean, that park was a miserable hitter's park all year. So you always think it's going to warm up in the summer and the balls will start flying out. It just did not. It was a terrible place to hit all year. So I think that was a factor in it. It was a frustrating year. I would tell you this, it was a frustrating year. Ultimately, I don't think that they finished with a win total that was very different from what they expected internally or what I expected.
Yeah. Yeah. It might've been like two games different. They thought they'd be in the playoffs. Right. I mean,
well, so then the other part that I would point out is this, that I think that I know fans are disappointed, and especially off the way they finished last year and figured, okay, they'll improve, but it was basically the same team and they ultimately played the same. So if you're disappointed, I don't know exactly where you thought that it was going to be better. They kind of played the same. I think that the one area where it was a little different is, like, the sixth seed got 89 wins. I don't think that anybody competing for playoff spots in front offices this year anticipated that the sixth seed, right, that it would take great 89 point wins. I think that they thought that it would be more like 84, 85.
Yeah, back to the last question I have for you, and back to, like, kind of just being a fan of the game. It's so fun, and it's very clear you have fun calling postseason baseball. And not that you would be calling Cubs postseason baseball, but how much does it suck? I mean, seriously, how much does it suck for you to call 145 or 150 games of the Cubs, and then when you get to October that there's no reward, even though you wouldn't be on those games, but there's just no reward at the end of the tunnel?
I mean, I don't know that. I feel like that's making it about me. Like, I don't need to be rewarded. It's just, it's
sure you
more,
do.
It's just,
yeah, but yeah, like it is a little bit. I mean, it's hard to.
We kid about that, but yeah. But fans roll with you and yep. JD. Yeah. Okay, they roll with Pat and Ron. Okay,
yep.
There is emotion built up. I'm being with a team all year,
right?
Wanting them to win.
Right.
You know, right? I mean.
Yeah, so I would say, I think I probably look at it as in a more active sense, that when you get into the postseason, it's just that much more fun. I mean, that's it. It's just, it would be amazing. Look, I've been at Wrigley for playoff games before I got this job. It's an amazing, special place. And you know, when I got the job, I said baseball matters on the north side. That has not changed. And you know, the bar, I think that, you know, one of the things that's like a positive and a negative is that the bar is so much lower in terms of fan engagement than almost any other place. And what I mean by that is, you know, in Kansas City, they lost 106 games last year. You know, and they're in the playoffs this year. But, like, with the Cubs, you know, if they're in the neighborhood of 500, like, the fans are ready, baby. And even if they're not in the neighborhood of 500, it's so I do think that there are positives and negatives to that aspect, that, like, I mean, look, for me, it's a total positive. I would say that, you know, in the macro, you wonder, it's the thing that makes the place so amazing. That's for sure.
Mr. Ricketts and his family made a good purchase in 2009. They made an excellent business decision. John, we'll be listening to you. Who's your partner on the series?
I dragged Doug Glanville with me from Milwaukee. So me and Dougie G will be together on the
radio.
Awesome.
We'll be listening. Appreciate it. Enjoy your friendship all through the year. Thanks so much, buddy.
Okay. Thanks, Boog.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks, guys.
The great Boog Sciambi. He'll be on the call when the Mets and Phillies play this afternoon at 3 p.m. on ESPN Radio.
He really touched on a very sensitive area at the end, didn't he?
Yeah.
It's like Cub fans are the best. And Cub fans are the easiest to please.
It's been a long-standing argument. I don't disagree with that, but I wanted to ask him that question because I do think it's important for fans to hear that. I think it's okay to talk about yourself and feel like you're pissed that it didn't happen. You know, like baseball is different on the north side. It should be different on the north side, and you should have those expectations. Speaking of stay or go, and who's going to be part of expectations? We're going to play our favorite game because it's the offseason now, Bruce. We're going to do stay or go about Cody Bellinger. He's got a big decision looming. We're going to talk about free agency. We have Jerry Harrison joining us at the bottom of the 10 o'clock hour. He's Bruce Levine. I'm Ryan McGuffey. This is Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. And always live on the free Odyssey app.
Stay or go, Cody Bellinger at the top of the hour. Jerry Harrison, 10:30, to talk about the Dodgers, the Padres, and maybe the next White Sox manager. But Bruce, the phone lines are lit up, my friend. There's people with thoughts on the Cubs and more. Let's go to Elmhurst Steve, who joins us on the line. Welcome to Inside the Clubhouse.
Yeah, hello, guys. You know, one of the things that I've been thinking about, which I realize this is kind of radical, but what if you were to go to Suzuki and Hap and tell them, look, we want to be fair with you. We want to do right by you, but we really need to get these young players that we have, you know, on the field. So give us a list of teams that you would agree to be traded to. And I'm going to tell you up front, if you're not going to give me a list, we're going to place you on waivers. Any team can claim you and assume your contract. And we don't want to do that if you will cooperate with us. But if you're not going to go along with this plan, we're going to have to follow through with this. And if you end up having to do that, another team claims them, sure, you get nothing in return. But you get the contract off your books, and you open up the spot for these other players. And if they do agree to it because they want to go to a decent team, not some, you know, the Pirates or some team that has no chance, then, you know, hopefully you can get at least a good relief pitcher and something, you know, of value, or a minor leaguer that someday will be really valuable. But it's something that I think might sound a little bit radical, but I would definitely strongly consider it.
Steve, what young players are knocking on the door that you want to take these two guys, who are two of your top three home runners?
Trianas and Casey, both outfielders that, you know, are highly regarded, and I would love to see Casey especially. You know, they talk about trading Horner, and I think as much as I like Horner, I think he's a tremendous player, phenomenal defensive player. Probably going to win his second Gold Glove there. And he hustles all the time, plays the game right, but he doesn't have much pop. And, you know, Shaw is their number one prospect, so he's a guy who could fill in. That's his best position. And so if you can get something of great value for him, you know, that makes sense too.
Thank you so much. Look, first of all, they're not going to do that.
No.
Second of all, the only way to get them to do it is say, we're going to extend you a year each at the same salary. Will you accept that?
Hap is owed $40 million. Suzuki's owed $38 million.
And at the same time, you will waive your no trade. So they're not going to do it unless you give them something, all right? If you give them millions of dollars, they'll consider it. And they'll also consider the fact that you're telling them you don't necessarily want them anymore.
Right.
Okay. Now that's a dangerous thing to play in a clubhouse where you sit, you make it about business, but I don't think it's the first time they've gone to Hap and said, will you consider a trade? Okay. You know, from my information, they probably went to him at the trade deadline and asked him, and he said no. Okay. That's his right.
Absolutely.
Just got married, just moved into a beautiful home in Highland Park. Okay. Why would you want to leave the Cubs?
Look, I just don't understand why. I just don't. Who's knocking on the door? Which prospect is saying, I'm coming up here to hit 30 home runs and Ian Happ is blocking?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, Ian Happ is a really good player. So is Suzuki. So
they're your two best offensive players this year.
So giving them away is not an option.
No. Okay. Well, we're going to talk about this free agency a lot more. We're going to have a big discussion about stay or go. Should he stay or should he go? Cody Bellinger at the top of the hour. That's Bruce Levine. I'm Ryan McGuffey. It's Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score.